Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. I have another first going on here. I don't even know where to start with this one. If you got our promotion, you know that supposedly my guest today is going to be Joe Lieb and Joan Kramer. And I said supposedly because the word guest, you know that they are the ladies of the War Report. What is so special for me is that they have never been on a show in terms of, quote, as a guest, co-host or what have you. They're not guests, folks. They're, as a minimum, they're my co-host. Most accurately, this is their show. I'm the albatross around their neck on this show. And also, this show is, it should be really huge in that every teacher in America should be listening to this show. Every teacher in America should call in and be a caller on this show, because the subject matter is life and death as it relates to both public schools, public school teachers, neighborhood schools, democracy. It really doesn't get too much bigger than this. So I'm going to almost turn the show over to the people who are really hosting the show today, and I'm going to be around. I'll be the albatross, as I said before, and I'm going to do something that I almost never do. I'm going to give our call-in number that you can call in and listen at the same time, because we are going way out here to encourage people to call in. And that call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. With that, folks, I'd like to introduce your host for today, Joe Lieb in Connecticut. Hi, Joe.
Hi, James.
And here. Joan Kramer in Los Angeles. Hi, Joan.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm okay. I know you were not expecting this, but basically this is your show. I will give a little intro, and you ladies can take it from there, and I will be your sidekick for today. Let me also say that I don't think we will be able to do this issue justice in one show. As of now, we're going to make this a series, a two-part series. We'll continue with next week because there's a huge agenda here that we can't get through. And if you guys call in, like we love for you to do, we certainly could not get to it. Let me give you a little background. 1 week, one day ago, Saturday, when I finally got around to going through my social media or emails, whatever, there was a conversation going on between, but I'm going to say, mostly if not all teachers, and they were going back and forth over this issue of unions and charter schools. They were having at it, pros and cons, personal, professional positions on it, et cetera. And I followed it all day long. I certainly wanted to find out what the teachers were saying and what position they were taking on the issues. And I decided then that we need to do a show that was inspired by that conversation last week. And Joe, since you were very much involved in that conversation, I'm not going to introduce you guys any more than what I've already done, because everyone should know you now. So go ahead, tell us about that conversation, how it got started, and then what the thrust of it was.
The conversation got started after I had gone to a union meeting and was actually suffering from what I call cognitive dissonance flu, because I couldn't understand how my union appeared to be promoting, saying charters were okay after all that I have lived through in the last decade and a half of ed reform. So I put a question out there. I said, what is the difference between unions promoting new charter schools and unionizing existing charter schools? And the discussion just was really intriguing and really pretty cool, and heard a lot of voices for unions, against for charters, against charters, a lot of arguments why we should be charterizing as a union, arguments why we shouldn't be, and this big thing is just rising up in me is like, I don't get it. You know, I don't get it. I look out there, I see, you know, I see Gulen charter schools and this man who, heaven knows what his real priorities are, running schools. I go out there, I see New Orleans, which is a total charter school district, no public schools left. I look at Detroit, where you've got our apartheid up there with charter schools getting all the funds and public schools not getting all the funds. I see Achievement First in Connecticut, where kids are striking because the charter schools don't give them a voice. You know, and I remember the horrors of Eva Moskowitz and Michelle Ray. So I sit here saying, how can unions promote or support charter proliferation in this country? And that's my question.
Joan?
Hi.
Tell everyone what's happening in Los Angeles. My hometown, your hometown.
My hometown. Yes, my hometown is well known because we have the most charters in the United States. My hometown feels like the Wild West most of the time, where anyone can do anything they want, and there's no consequences, none. And I started hearing about charters back in the 90s, and what they did to teachers from the very beginning was expecting them not to have lives. You know, you were supposed to be at school from 7 in the morning till 7 at night, and you were not allowed to have another life besides what you did at school. That was the first thing I knew about charters. So I do feel that charters do exploit teachers and that something needs to be done. But something needs to be done all the way around about charters. Everything that's about them is not true. So.
And also, how about telling them about Eli Broad? And
about,
supposedly, remember, was it 2014 or 2015, the supposedly leaked memo plan saying that what he wanted to see happen in Los Angeles in, what, 5 years, 6 years? I'll let you tell that story.
Well, I just know that our great benefactor, I don't know why his name is escaping me since I have a big sign in my bedroom against what
Eli
he does. Say it.
Eli Broad?
Thank you. Eli Broad, the great philanthropist who has, you know, built his billions on housing out here in this area and probably elsewhere. And he decided that half the schools in Los Angeles should be charter schools, and that was his plan. And somebody found his plan and actually leaked it, so that was quite good.
And you and I met where?
And we met at a demonstration right in front of his foundation, I believe it is.
Exactly. Right there on Century Boulevard, Century City, is when you and I met for the first time. And that's actually the only time we actually physically have met. And we were demonstrating against Eli Broad and his efforts to charterize the district. And since then, he also, something I'm going to sort of like get ahead of us for one moment, too. Like most areas where the charter movement is waging war, they not only seek to increase their numbers in terms of charter schools, but they also wage war on school boards. And in Los Angeles, there is a major, major war going on to unseat I think he's still the president of the school board.
Yes.
A person who started out as a charter school teacher and then eventually got into, I guess, politics, because school board members are politicians, that's more than anything else, and got elected to the school board, and not so long ago was selected by his peers to be the president. And he is number one enemy far as the Eli Broads and people as far away as here in the state of New York. I just stop and think, like, where am I? The state of New York and the former Mayor Bloomberg and other billionaires who are pumping tens of thousands of dollars, maybe up to $1 million, just to make sure they unseat this guy. So when you're talking about charters, and we use the term here in our description for today's show, the war, charter school war, it's not just a war on schools. It's on school boards. It's on teachers. It's on students. It's on democracy. And back to our question of today, tomorrow, all of yesterday, is this thing about unions and their, I don't know what you would call it, because I'm trying to be more polite because you ladies are on the show. I don't want to go all me like I always do.
It's okay, James.
We
don't
no,
mind.
You don't know what I want to say and what I've been holding back all week as we were preparing this show. But, okay, part of it. When I was listening to or reading the comments, I'm going, no, I won't go there. I think I better pass because I'm getting emotionally engaged and I don't want some words to come out that will come out of here. Back to that conversation you guys were having last Saturday. I was struck by the range of opinions and position on this charter school issue, unions and the charter school issue. But remember, it was either, I think, 2015, if not 2016, that AFT was out trying to let teachers who are in charter schools help them unionize.
Right. Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
And it should not come as a surprise to anyone to find out that AFT, I don't know where NEA is on this, support charter schools. Now, my question from what I just said is, are there teachers and supposedly at least unionized teachers, 5-6 million of us now, 7 million, down from, I think, our high of over 10 million. In our ranks, are there teachers today who are not aware of their union, either be the local, state, national union, are supporting or not opposing charter schools and the proliferation of charter schools? Joe, was that what you, I don't know, discovered, that there are a lot of people who are either neutral on the issue
or they just
out and out supporters?
Or they, it's not so much supporters as that they believe what their union is telling them, and they believe that the direction that their union is taking them is the right direction. My union newspaper, I'm NEA, my union magazine this month was where actually this started with me, was because I opened it up and there were three pages, big full color pages, devoted to unions. They called it the good, the bad, and the unknown. They tried to get both sides of the story, but they also said that there are these great union charters. There are these great union charters, and this is what we support. We support these great union charters. And that just sat wrong with me. And now I actually teach in a city that has no charters, but has the threat of charters coming in, and it's almost like a done deal, is we're going to get a charter. And I look and I say, where is this coming from? And yeah, maybe it's coming with the support of my union, but I think it's coming from the new ESSA law that's proliferating charters and choice and whatever you want to call it, which is really, to me, the destruction of public education. And it makes me nuts that people don't see the big picture, that, you know, charters are out there to break the public education system, in my opinion. I don't think that the two of them can live together, a public school system and a private public school system.
Well, I would totally agree with you, except for the last word, almost words that you said when you said public charters. There's no such thing as a public charter, my
opinion.
But
that's what they call them.
There's no such thing as a public opinion. a public charter school, in my opinion. I'm restating that, and that's what's contained in that is they're lying their ass off. There's never been an intent for it to be public. As back here in New York and other places, when you take charter schools to court for whatever reason, the first thing they say is that we are private. We don't have to open our books to anyone. We are private. We don't have to do X, Y, Z. We don't have to do what the public school would be mandated to do. They walk out of the courtroom, they exit the building, and the first thing they say, oh, we are public. We are public schools, so that the dollars will continue to come. So this talking out of your left side of your face, the right side of your face, as the situation requires. And put it this way, they were Donald Trump before Donald Trump.
Exactly. They were.
And I'm sorry, folks, but I have to go there. You know, talking out of their ass. No,
well, my thing about okay.
Can't hold back too much longer. Basically, that's it. But I'm going back to this question, and this is what I was hoping that some of the teachers would call in here.
Right.
Are you guys not aware that your unions or your union's position on charter school? That's the biggest question. And whether or not the attempt to unionize existing charter school is smokescreen. Well, the argument has been, if we being the union, I mean, if the union step in and aid those teachers to become unionized, then somehow that's going to be a magic bullet in making the charter schools real public schools, making the charter schools a real quality provider of education.
That's one of the main arguments.
Let's
unionize charters so that we can change them from within. Oh. I don't see that happening.
No. Because I've only been told out here that it was because, you know, they deserve to be unionized, which is true, and they deserve better conditions, and we're going to make it better for teachers. I mean, there's no sort of pretense out here that it's going to make the charters change, although they feel that if they are able to unionize them, then they'll have to change, which I think is wrong. I don't think it's true. Because we have a whole set of green dot charters that were unionized by AFT from the very beginning, and it's a company union.
Do people not see the fallacy and the justifications that the two of you just laid out, and I think I contributed a little bit too? How about the fact that charter schools are pretty much manned by, am I wrong here, Teach for America type charter schools, especially in Wisconsin and those states where they have now said that anyone who lives, is alive, breathing, no criminal record, but who has expertise in a subject area can come in and teach. Like the old notion of, we're giving you credit in college now for your work experience, life experience. I don't know if any of you remember back in, I would say, the 70s, 80s, that colleges could get people to come, the marketing to increase our student body. Some schools were giving life experience credit. If you were a mechanic and you had to deal with mathematical formulas and your work and et cetera, we would give you credit for math. If you were XYZ and you, I don't know if to put how many years, months you have to have for experience, we will give you X number of credits for your life experience, thus cutting down on the number of years you will have to put in and to earn your degree. We do it to some extent now with service learning. Colleges and universities are touting that they offer opportunities for service learning. You take a course, you go out, you work for a nonprofit, or you work over here, you spend time over there, and you'll get 3 units, you get 5 units of credit. I don't see anything wrong with that, but because hopefully service learning can be extremely valuable if handled properly. In terms of, when I say properly, I'm thinking of, you're there to get an education, you're there to knowledge and skills and experience, adding that to it is fantastic. But when you use that as a vehicle to say, oh, well, you're qualified to come in here and start teaching our kids, no. And so my overall message or point here is that you go around the country and you see what governors, state legislatures, and school boards have done, and most likely will continue to do wherever possible, is to continue an assault or that area of the war on public school teachers. And let's take it back, pull it back for a bigger picture here, on our colleges and university teacher preparation programs. When you can come out of an Ivy how that's how, you know, Teach for America started, and quote your best and brightest, and you go into a five-week program, which, by the way, does anyone have any idea what that five-week program is all about?
Yes.
Do they spend 6 hours, 4 hours? Do they actually learn something?
I mean, Behavior modification.
How much can you learn? Huh?
Behavior modification?
I don't even think they do that. It's a rah-rah thing. They have rallies, and they, you know, they go into rooms and cheer each other on, mainly.
You know, big kumbaya, whatever. And then you come out and you put them into the schools that need experienced teachers, knowledgeable teachers, best credential, best practice teachers that maybe will take 5, 10, 15 years to acquire that skill set. And you bring these people out, 22, 23 years old, and you plop them into a school in the middle of urban centers and say, you, as Duncan say, you're highly qualified. Now, am I wrong in terms of most of the teachers in the charter schools? And I know they're in Los Angeles, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
I think all you have to do is have a bachelor and pass the CBS.
Well, that actually was true of LA Unified in general at one point when we had a shortage of teachers. And even when I got my credential for being in a library, I was allowed to work in a library as I earned my credential. So it's, you know, they have flexibility when there's need. You know, they all seem to, even the public system. So I would say many of the teachers that went to charters in Los Angeles went because they could not get jobs in our schools, but when they could, they switched as soon as possible because they saw what the charters were like and they would switch back. You know, they wanted to be in the public schools. They knew that teachers had more rights. They knew that the kids were treated better, but they don't always have a choice and they need a job. But that's another aspect.
I would be a witness to that. I was a sub. Was a long-term sub for a year in LAUSD. And I know I took the CBS and I passed it the first time. And when the principal of the particular school that I was assigned to, she immediately started saying to me that they wanted me to take the district's certification program. And that she would work with me in terms of scheduling and da-da-da-da, and wanted me in the community. All the people there were saying they really wanted me to get into the credentialing program instead of staying just 1 year as a long-term sub. And what I also knew people who took the CBS at bachelor's, didn't pass.
Right.
And they were going to go the alternative teaching route. Hence, they were going to go to those schools, private schools, what have you, that they could come in with their bachelor's and teach. So back, my point was that when you're talking about unionizing these teachers, aren't you unionizing? And again, you ladies are much more on the front line in this area than I am, but charter schools, don't they still have, most of them will have, or if you put them aggregate together, they're going to have people who probably did not go through a teacher prep program 2 years, 3 years, maybe not have a credential that in some places require you to have a master's degree to get your certification. What I guess I'm trying to drive home is that, I'll just say it, how in the hell can any, and I start using another word, you know, that's why I hesitated, any teacher, if they are aware of the issue that we're talking about today, could support, and this is my opinion, folks. You, of course, have your your right to your opinion. Just like when you go in a voting booth, you have your right to vote for whom you want to. But how can any teacher sanction their union supporting charter schools in any fashion? Now, I'll say it again. That's my opinion.
Right? One of the arguments that you get One of the arguments you'll get, even from teachers, I've heard from teachers, is that, well, some of the schools are such failures, such failure factories, that the people in the communities need to have a choice, and charters give them a choice. And that is just such a lie to me. That our public schools are failing. Our public schools are not failing. Our public schools are broken. Our public schools are wounded. Our public schools are under attack. But if we would just invest in our public schools, then the families would be happy with their children going to those schools.
Well, I had Friday, I had a meeting. And the person that I met with, and I won't give any details, but very, very high position, very, very high office that I met with, and almost one of early in the conversation, it was, well, public schools are doing so poorly.
That is the big lie.
I stopped this person and I said, and you know that. How or why? Now, the person looked at me, because you could tell from, I guess, the expression on my face that I totally did not agree with him. And so we had this conversation. I was in the meeting for like 2 hours. And there were a couple statements that this person would make that I just flat out would tell the person, you're wrong. I don't even say I disagree with you, but you are wrong. And which was my equivalent of saying, you don't know your ass from a hole in the ground. And when I say this is a person in a very high office, you don't get too much higher than this office and this person. And he was speaking like millions of parents, the public, everyone who has this believe that public schools are failure, public school teachers are failures, and that the reason kids are dropping out of school, reason kids are getting involved in crime is because their public schools are so bad, their teachers are so bad that they don't want to be there.
Doesn't it make you cry?
No, it just pissed me off.
It makes me cry. It just makes me...
I can understand that, but no, it pisses me off completely.
Uh-huh.
And wherever that comes out of their mouths, I tell them what I just pretty much told you guys. Although I don't say, you know... Okay, we have a caller. Are you there, caller?
Yes.
Hello? Hi. And you are?
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to the War Report. Do you have a question or statement?
Hi, I'm Larry Lawrence.
Welcome, Larry.
I'm getting feedback here, so. Hello?
We're here. We're listening.
We're hearing you. We hear you.
Okay, I was getting feedback, so I'm still getting it, but I'll go ahead. I'm a retired educator. I started teaching in Morningside High School in Inglewood. I was a math teacher, and then I went on to UCLA has a laboratory elementary school and worked there many years and was an administrator in the outer world. And I thought I might describe, you were talking about the perception of the public school. And by the way, I saw Joan and you at the march in front of Broad's building back in 2015, and we also met at Tina Andrus' house, where she did for the Badass Teachers in 2014.
Well, then you and I probably met. I was at both of those events.
Yes, and I also talked to you at the United Opt Out in January last year ago January. Anyway. I want to talk a little bit about Morningside High School because I think it's sort of an example of what you're talking about. I went there as a student, graduated in 1954, which will, if you're any of you are mathematics oriented, you can tell my vintage then. Went back there as a teacher in 1959 and taught there for 7 years. It was an all-white middle class school, and it was right on the edge of the Watts riots, and after the Watts riots of 65, it became one of those schools where you had a lot of white flight, and it became a predominantly school of African-American students in the late 70s and through the 80s, and today it's a predominantly Latino school. When I left there in 1966, it was 2,000 students. Today it's 800. And I've watched it over the years. I became a little more active as an alumni group in 2008. And we began to notice that there a lack of supplies. I talked to the music teacher, and he had no music. He had no instruments. I could go through several examples over the years. The latest one was that the Alumni Association pressured the district to fix up the baseball field and donated equipment. So the school is without all of these things that you would think of a large high school having, they don't have. And as we know, California's schools in general are underfunded. So this school has been losing students. They had a bad reputation in the 80s as kind of the home base of the Bloods and the Crips and all that sort of thing. So the population and the reputation and such. And now charter schools have been taking students away and away and away. Mm-hmm. And now we just had a decision by the Los Angeles County to allow a Blue Dot, which Joan mentioned, a Green Dot, rather, school, which Joan mentioned earlier, is going to co-locate, perhaps, on Morningside's campus, further undermining the whole school. So I think when you talk about, you know, the people's perceptions of schools, they're underfunded, under-resourced, and then, of course, these reputations that they get, it's very difficult to get teachers and that sort of thing. So I've watched this erosion of the school, you know, for the last 50 years in terms of all these factors. And so, and I live right now, I look down on over 2,000 student high school in northern coastal San Diego County that has everything, that looks like a college campus. So I go to I visit Morningside High School, and I visited there a couple of days and sat in on classes a couple of years ago. And I go to Morningside, it looks like a third world, and then I go to La Costa Canyon, which is right below me. And there's, the contrast, and they're both public schools, the contrast is just unbelievable. So this is what's happening, and so the charter school looks more attractive. There's no charter schools in my area, but there are charter schools in Inglewood galore because parents, it looks a little more attractive, and So, and I talked to a couple of students when I visited there a couple of years ago, and I said, are people interested in charters? And, oh, yeah, I've got some friends that are going. And I said, well, why are they? Well, they offer Mandarin. So all the people who want Mandarin over here, maybe they're, and all the people that were segregating more and more. So I think this is distressing, and I think we need to really look at the basic concept of how do we support our public schools. If Morningside High School is got some problems, how do we work on that, and what can we do about it? Not take everybody out and make it worse. We've just made it worse along the way. So there.
It almost feels like, you know, we've set up certain schools to fail.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and I think...
self-fulfilling prophecy? Let's make these schools fail so we can open up our private schools. That's what it's about. You know? Their failures...
If just starving them isn't enough, let's put the pressure on the teachers. You know,
right.
Let's make them test to the test. Let's make them, have these awful evaluation systems. You know, let's just set up the school so that, you know, these schools fail. It's just not right.
And I went to I got in trouble in a meeting recently when I suggested that Morningside High School's math scores were at the first percentile last year, and I suggested that one way about that is simply not take the test. Oh, no, we can't do that because the federal government says 95% of the people. And I said, well, nobody's ever been monitored for that. I mean, that's nonsense. And no, we can't do that. So it's very difficult to get the ball rolling.
Larry, there's another point of connection between you and I. I also subbed in Inglewood, and I subbed at Morningside High School.
All right.
Wow.
I told you guys I'm a oh God, I've been around a long time, and I've done a lot of things. Yes, it was early 90s, 91 to 92, that I served in Inglewood Unified School District as a sub. And I don't know how many times I was sent to Morningside. So, but back to the point, Larry. What's your position on unions supporting, promoting charter schools, either for the purpose of wanting to unionize them?
My feeling is that. I think the whole charter school concept of having an alternative school is flawed. I think we really need to look at schools, support them, and having worked at a laboratory school for many years, I listened to the debate on Intelligence Squared with Julian Vasquez Heilig is about charter schools, and the person that was a charter school person was talking about, she was asked, well, what are some of the things that charter schools have done that would be good ideas for the school? And she said, well, group project work. So I worked at a school at UCLA that in the 1920s began the whole concept of working in projects and group projects. So this is not like a new idea. And the school was famous for it in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are plenty of public schools and you certainly can do that. And I think that if we want to have schools that can try things, the perfect model is right in the middle of Los Angeles is the UCLA Community School, which is a pilot school that they work with the Los Angeles Unified School District to try some new ideas, and that's what they're doing. It's over on where Robert Kennedy was shot. The Ambassador Hotel is now converted into a series of schools. And that's the sort of thing that we could be doing right within the public school system, and there's no reason why we... So I don't think it's healthy to go outside and somebody said something about competition to me, and I said that when I was teaching, I was working night and day, and so competition wouldn't have changed me at all. It would have irritated me, but it wouldn't. I was doing my best, and it would have been well.
Larry, I've got two questions. When were you at UCLA? What years?
I was there in two stints. I was there from 1966 to 75, and then I went out into the outer school to be an elementary principal, and I worked in a couple of school districts in the district office. And then I came back in 1982, and then I retired from there. So
I was at UCLA part of that first stint that you were there. I was at UCLA from 72 to 77, the Sociology Department and African American Studies. Are you the guy who listens to the War Report when you're walking on the beach?
Absolutely.
I now remember you in front of the Broad Foundation.
Yes.
You and I had a long talk, and you told me you always listen to the War Report when you were walking on the beach in the morning.
Lucky guy.
Actually, I was listening to last week's program, Walking on the Beach, this morning. So I can say that Joanne and Joan you were talking about them, so I learned all kinds of things about them and that sort of thing. So.
Oh, this is so cool for me. Okay. Of course, we got about 5 minutes left. I wish some other people would call in, and I'll restate my position that this is a huge topic, a huge issue, and that, needless to say, if our unions are supporting charter schools and with all the other people who are supporting charter schools, we are in deep doo-doo. See how I clean that up? We're in deep doo-doo here in terms of...
Can I just say one thing about the whole thing, James?
Yes.
I just want to say my main thing is that regardless of what you think of charter schools or what kinds of teachers are there or anything, the fact is charters are undermining our public school system. And as soon as they become, as Eli Broad would like, the majority of our schools, our system is going to fail. In fact, before that, and I think it's Standard and Poor's or one of those has said that we are dangerously close to, to being non-existent because we can't support ourselves. And that's what they're designed to do, is to take away all the money so that we can't stay open.
Mm-hmm.
So it's objective besides being subjective.
Joe?
Just the unions need to support public schools, not charter schools. They need to support the wonderful things that happen in charter schools and public schools. We educate all children. We don't turn anybody away. We deliver unbiased instructions. It doesn't matter what our personal religion or our personal ideology is. We don't let that seep into our lesson plan. We treat all children equally. We have relationships with each and every kid. We care about them as people, as whole people, mind, body, soul, emotions, social issues. And we educate a child so that the child's going to live to his potential and give back his best to the world. That's what a public school teacher does. I'm still in it. I'm in it, so I'm really passionate about this. And to see that lost, to me, is to see an incredible failure in our democracy right now. And a very, very, very strong attack on our country and our children. And I just want, my union, who, and I love my union. I love the benefits I get. I love my salary. I love many things about my union, but I want to see them protecting public schools and not charter schools, because it's so obvious to me that charter schools are just out there to take us out, us public school teachers out.
Larry, you still there?
Yes. I couldn't agree more with that, and I think that what we do need to do is to emphasize what schools, what resources schools need to be what we want them to be. You can't take school libraries away and school nurses away and not have supplies, as I mentioned at Morningside, and not have the facilities, the ruined schools that you were discussing some programs ago, and many programs ago in Detroit. We've got to push for what education is and that needs resources, and we need to really push for that so that we don't have the what people perceive as a failure, and stand by the public school. But we need to support them, and we need more support.
Well, I won't have any closing remarks because, as I said at the top of the show, we just touched the tip of the iceberg here today. And I'm going to make this a two-part series. We'll be back next week, and I'm hoping Joan and Joe will come back. And Larry, you certainly be welcome to call in again. I'm going to sort of go solo. I'm sort of going to go rogue. In other words, I'm going to piss off a whole lot of people, probably a lot of teachers too, in the process. So I'll put that on me and not the team, because there are so many good points that we have worked up that deserve their own show, and I should do it because, again, I'm doing everything I can do to restrain myself because my ladies are on today, and I would never want to do something that they may say, "Ooh, we wish you hadn't said it that way," but so I'm going next week commando style. Make it straight out there. So, I will say this. One of the issues that I've had with the 3 years that we've been on the air is this is a show for teachers and parents. Like Joan said, she's a teacher. She's retired. Larry's a teacher, retired. Joe is a teacher. I was a teacher. This show is for you guys. And it really disturbed me when we have a show like this and that we don't get some public, from the teachers, from our community, input on this. I mean, you guys get on Facebook and you light it up. Here you have an opportunity to come on. There's 30 seconds and add your input, and you don't. And particularly on this show. So we're going to take another shot next week. Hopefully you will come on. With that, folks, I'm going to have to say goodbye. Thank you, Joan. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Larry. And to everyone else, have a good rest of your day, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye, everyone.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.